Hello, everybody. This is Sue Hall and Tristan McDonald, and another podcast in series two, Talking the Dis Out of Dyslexia, hosted by the Whole Dyslexic Society. This series is focusing on prevention, methods that we can use in schools to make sure that the challenges don't have a chance to occur. And today we have an international flavor because I'm so delighted to be able to introduce Maggie Robertson from New Zealand. And really, that's all I know, except that Maggie is very much involved with Davis Learning Strategies. So welcome, Maggie. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. So Davis Learning Strategies, I guess we should explain to people what they consist of. Would you like to do that?
Sure. It's based around a reading program for students, and it gives all the tools of the Davis program. So we have our focus, our dial, we do Cush, and then we look at our alphabet, the reading strategies, and then trigger words. So yes, that's the basic, and we start right from five-year-olds when they come into our school.
Brilliant. I believe the history of it was that there was a facilitator in the Davis organization very early on called Sharon Pfeiffer, and she was a teacher and she became a facilitator. And then she must have had a discussion with Ron and said, well, you know what, if we morphed the methods that we use for correction a little bit so that they could be delivered by classroom teachers, then maybe we could help these challenges never to occur. And I think that's how it started off, and she spearheaded the whole thing.
Yes, no, so she did spearhead the whole thing, and it did change. And yes, there are a lot of similarities between the programs. It's just been adapted so younger children can understand.
Yeah, totally. You were a facilitator before you were a teacher, or a teacher before you were a facilitator?
No, I'm not even a facilitator yet, which is quite interesting. So how the process started for me, when I had a young man in my class, and he was about 7 years old, I think, and he'd come from another school. His mother had brought him along. I'd got to know him over about 6 or 8 weeks, and I thought, oh, something's going on here. So I said to her one day, I'd like to have a chat about your son, and I'd like to show you what I've been doing in class. And I brought her in, I showed her some of the things I've been doing. I've been to a course about dyslexia, nothing to do with Davis at that point, and just used a few tips to help me. And then I said to her, I think your son maybe, I'm not sure because I didn't know very much then, he may be dyslexic. And she said, oh, I want to hug you. And I said, oh, that wasn't the reaction I was expecting. But she'd been trying to tell the other school for quite some time that she thought her son was, because she was, and she was just waiting to see our perception of him. And that's where the whole thing snowballed from, because my principal at the time, his sister, was a facilitator. So he brought her in, and we started the journey where I went on the Gift of Dyslexia course myself, because we didn't have a DLS course at that time.
Of course, it's like the first 4 days of the facilitator training. Yes. It's like an overview that people can take, whether they want to become facilitators or whether they want to just get a very good understanding of what's going on, right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So that gave us a very good background, and that's where I met the people and the facilitators that helped us on the journey to do DLS and for me to become a mentor in DLS. So yeah, that's how it got started.
Did you know much about dyslexia before you were introduced to the Davis Learning Method?
I had a few ideas. I've been on a few courses. I was probably quite sensitive to that. Since then, I discovered for myself that I was dyslexic. So
oh, wow.
I had very much struggled to learn to read as a young child. My mother had taught me by showing me sight words over and over and over again. I was in the bottom reading group right through primary school. Yes, reading was very difficult for me. So I guess I kind of had an empathy or an understanding, and I definitely didn't want children to feel they'd failed the system like I felt I'd failed the system and felt not good enough or not smart enough. So I probably had a bit of a passion there. That's where it kind of started, I think.
Yeah.
Did you attract a label, Maggie, or not?
No, never. And it's only since I first did the Gift of Dyslexia that I actually understood for myself how my own brain worked, because I wasn't stupid, I just thought in a different way.
Exactly. That was the same when I did my training. I thought, hang on a minute, maybe I can do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So actually, even backing up a little bit further, I heard a rumor that dyslexia really wasn't a thing in New Zealand for quite some time. Like, it's almost like babies brought dyslexia to New Zealand in a way.
Well, it was in 2007 that the Ministry of Education for New Zealand actually admitted that it was a thing, and have teachers and families aware. A lot of families fought very hard for that, mm-hmm. which has been really good, but it's still, there's still a lot of teachers learning to understand that. And as teachers now, we're expected to know so much and have so much understanding of so many things. It can be very difficult, but there is now supporting documentation to help, which is good.
And do you think that teachers now training in New Zealand, they would have this sort of information in their training yet?
I still think not enough. It's always touched on things, but not the deep understanding that you actually need to help these children. And that's what I find with teachers. And these are some experienced teachers, some newer to teaching, coming into my classroom to see what we do. Sometimes it's just simple things that they realize that they could be doing to help.
Do you hope it would be common practice, the Davis Learning Method, for teachers to learn in the future?
Oh, that would be amazing if teachers could be learning those skills before they came into classes. It would just help so many children, all children, not even the dyslexic, everybody.
But the thing is, Tristan, New Zealand has done an amazing job by comparison to other countries, especially North America, because so many teachers have been trained in the DLS methods compared to over here.
Yeah. It sounds to me it's more recognized in New Zealand, even though it wasn't really known until like 2007. It just seems you guys have taken more action than most other places.
Yes, I think they have. We have a lot of support learning programs around to help, although they don't get to everybody. And that's what's so great about DLS. It gives teachers the opportunity to do it within class. There's still a lot of ambulance at the bottom of the cliff in New Zealand. It would be great if there's a lot more fences built at the top. But I think probably because in New Zealand, we're a nation probably of creativity, a bit diverse thinking. We don't do things necessarily in the box. We've got a lot of farming community where we have that number eight wire mentality, you know, what have you got to fix it kind of attitude. That is a little bit helpful. There's still a lot of parents that if you talk to them about their child that don't want to know or to label it, or I guess their own anxieties through it.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody becomes aware of the fact that their child might have a learning challenge, do the schools typically do more of what they couldn't do in the beginning? Do they typically do more phonics, or are they a little bit wider in their approach?
We've always had a whole sort of more of a whole language approach, but phonics is becoming very much a strong thing in New Zealand now as well. But we are more general whole language, trying to incorporate everything in the programs.
It sounds like it was the perfect landing ground for DLS in a way, because like there wasn't much known about it and there weren't too many programs to take you in the opposite direction, which is what happened here, right? And so you had that perfect sort of soil, if you like, to get this new method off the ground.
Yes, definitely. And I think generally teachers, they want to do the best for their children. You know, they want to be able to help. And we do recognise there's a larger group of children also coming to school with anxiety, trauma, learning issues, and it's just rising all the time. So we need a way to help these children.
It's true. That seems to be the case, doesn't it? And you would have quite a few Indigenous children in your schools too?
More so in the North Island. New Zealand has definitely become very multicultural. So yes, it's a wide range within our schools now.
Ever since Lord of the Rings?
Yes, it's very, very diverse now. It's great. It's very eye-opening. I mean, it's definitely changed in the last 10, 15 years in New Zealand.
Has there been any like backlash from the DLS method coming in, even though it's been showing improvements? Has there anyone coming saying, oh, you know, we don't need this, or it's not that worthwhile?
There's definitely always teachers that can't see those steps, and there's also a lot of talk around proven research things like that, which obviously Sharon did some of that research, but New Zealanders do have a thing about research in New Zealand. So it's great that Jane went around and talked to those teachers and see the impact that it had on children. That has helped and it gives us something to...
Yeah, a little foundation to stand on.
I think most people that actually come into my classroom and see what's happening and how it impacts the children or talk to parents of children that have come to our school, they definitely know that it makes a difference.
Yeah.
The Jane that you were referring to is Jane Severinsen. If people who are listening to the podcast, if they want to go to our YouTube channel, the film that sort of catalogues all of this, it catalogues the statistics and what's actually done in the DLS, it's on our whole dyslexic YouTube channel. That's definitely worth a look. Maybe we should go into how this actually happens. So you went to a Gift of Dyslexia workshop, so you had an understanding of the methods generally for correction. And then did you go to a Davis Learning Strategy workshop?
Not straight away. Luckily, I met Lorna Timms, Shelley McMeekin, and Alma Holden. And they worked with me. Alma, a facilitator who had done some work in a school in central Otago, New Zealand, she came up and worked with me with a class. And we did the program with this group of students, even some just turning 8-year-olds. The boy that I was talking about earlier had already been away and worked with Lorna. So that was a great opportunity. He knew some of the background and the change that we saw in that large group of students, whether it be behavioural, social learning, was astronomical. And that's where I thought, actually, we need to be starting this in our school even younger. So by the time they are about 7, they're not already feeling like they've failed or really struggling.
That's fantastic. Do you teach a particular grade?
I originally started my teaching career in senior students, so that was 8 to 11-year-olds. And then when our new principal came, I went back to juniors. Then we had a growth in our role, and so I went to 7, 8-year-olds. And that's when I started the program, and then I came back to new entrants. And yeah, that's where we sort of started on the DLS journey.
Brilliant. Yeah. You're talking about kindergarten to grade 1.
Yeah, so our 5-year-olds are like your kindergarten.
Brilliant. So when you introduce these methods into the classroom, say we're talking about the kindergarten grade 1, do you start with release?
Yes, because I have children coming into my classroom all of the time. This term I've had 3 children start and I'm having another 3 visiting that will actually start at the beginning of next term. So I can have children arrive at any time during the term. Yes, it's very different, but I find that quite good because I can integrate them slowly and they get to see what other children are doing. I don't have everybody learning how to be in a classroom all at the same time. They come in slowly.
Different and interesting.
Yeah, very different to how you do it, but it works for us. Yes, we start with release and the focus. So we go to our desks. We get focused first thing in the morning. We talk about that. I do a lot of talk around dial. That's because there's a lot more anxious children now these days. And it's interesting, after our lockdown, a couple have started. We were only 4 days in and one girl got really upset at the end of the day because she didn't want to go on the bus the following day. I think she was just tired and struggling to deal with it. And she went home. I had messaged her mother to check she was all right. And she had actually said to her mother, well, my dial wasn't right and I didn't know what to do. And so her mother messaged me back and she said she was talking about a dial or something. Can you explain that? And I said, sure. And because I hadn't had lots to do with this parent, 4 days in, she was beginning to understand that her emotions had got so high that she couldn't think straight or see things correctly. So it makes an amazing difference that children so young can verbalise what's happening for them.
That is amazing. Mm-hmm. So they've got their release to be relaxed and they've got their focus to be able to pay attention. And then this energy dial, I mean, the dial is the thing that they know they can control their energy level. And it's magical.
Well, it's a brilliant way to communicate how they're feeling, right? Especially for their parents, they can explain a lot better.
Exactly. Yes, it's the same with another wee girl that's quite frightened of things. And we can talk about the fact that her dial's got so high that she's not seeing and hearing correctly. And when she gets it down, that we can do that. It's really powerful. And the parents that hear this and see their children come home and talk about it, it's very powerful for them as well.
Sometimes I have students who go home from a correction program and they're driving home with their parents and the parents are getting all frustrated with the traffic and the children said, you really need to get your dial down.
Yeah, I had a classic of a parent send a message to me laughing because a five-year-old had been in the yard. Her father was dealing with cattle and they were not going where they were supposed to be and he was getting rather wild. So she said, Dad, you need to get your dial down.
Well, it just goes to show the kids are putting it to practice outside of school. They clearly love it.
Oh, they do. And even within class, I'll have children tell each other that your dial's too high or you need to get your dial up. In the early years, I had one child say to another, you need to use your focus. It really helps, you know.
And if they're telling each other about the dialed and focus, do they ever say about release to each other?
Yes, they do. They will say, you need to do a release right now. And I mean, I'm modeling it myself constantly. Like if I get disorientated or confused or when I do something wrong, I'm saying, I really need to check my focus right now. And I do over-exaggerate it. So they are seeing all the time that I'm doing it as well. And if I'm doing kush with them, which we do every morning, sometimes I'll miss it because I'm watching what the other children are doing. And they'll say, oh, Mrs. Robertson, you're not focused yet.
Nice. So do you introduce the koosh after they've got all their three tools or do you do it in between? Or
we do it in between and as we go. I mean, as soon as they arrive at school and they see the other children doing it, they want to do it. It is very much a normal part of the day. And some children take longer than others in their ability to stand on one foot. But you can see that beginning of getting focused that they go from suddenly jiggling around and leaning to the side to actually being able to stand still and hold it. It's amazing.
Well, for some of our listeners, I don't know if all of them know what koosh is. Explain to them what you do with koosh.
Okay. So we have two koosh balls. Then we have to be focused, so in a good place to be able to catch the koosh balls. When children are very good at this and they can completely focus, you can actually stand on one foot and catch the balls. We throw to opposite hands, which for some children is very difficult when they first come to school, even learning to focus long enough to eye track to get the ball into their hand. Or for those children that their dial is too high and they're moving so much that they're batting the ball from this side and that side. So we have to do a lot of talk about focus and releasing and dial being in the right place.
And do you find that the time varies for them to catch on to these tools? Do some take it very quickly, some take a little while?
Yes, definitely. There are children that just pick it up really quickly. The ones that I know that are more likely dyslexic, sometimes for them, they can take a bit longer to get their focus. So once they have it, it's mind-blowing. And I guess for the children that have come from other schools, they definitely ask for the koosh balls and ask to do koosh during the day because it makes such a difference to them. So you know for those children that it's a big impact.
So once they've got their tools and they've got their koosh exercise, then you start with alphabet mastery, is that right?
Yes, we just start learning to roll the clay and get the skills going, make the shapes, joining. For some children, again, that just takes a long time to learn to just stay focused on that. And I mean, they do very well because it's also classroom with, at the moment, there's 20 children in my classroom. So it's a busy environment. So we talk about that, you know, you're in charge of being focused. You can do this and stay on tasks.
Do they master the letters individually? Like they would make an A and they'd master it?
Yeah. Yes, sometimes I can do it with two, but most of the time I've got a group of about four and one could be doing A, one could be doing C, one could be doing G, and I could have somebody on capitals or I could have somebody on lowercase, so it can vary within the group.
Wow, you have to be a multitasker.
Yes, you have to, and you have to be very well in control of your own dial.
Yeah. I know when I did my program with you, Sue, you were explaining how mostly adults, whenever they're doing the clay words and they're messing up a clay letter, there's usually an emotional attachment to it. Do you ever find that with the younger students? Like they can't seem to get G, they keep making a P. Do they have an emotional attachment to it?
Not so much with my 5 and 6 year olds. When I first, that first program I did with 7 and 8, there was a lot of questions, and Alma, the facilitator, had to come in a lot to help us because there were children that already had those attachments to letters. But because we're starting at 5, they don't have that. And for a lot of them, they don't know their letters yet or have any association.
Right.
So you don't have those complications.
That's the beauty of catching them at the very beginning, because they're learning them absolutely brand new. Whereas once they've learned them and they've had a struggle with them, then they start to get those confusions embedded in the letters, and then you have to do the correction part.
I definitely did.
Yes.
Adults have tons very often.
We have some amazing people in New Zealand that are doing work about brain science, especially in children. And the understanding now that our frontal cortex is not ready to learn until potentially the average is around 7 years old. So here we are trying to teach these 5 and 6 year olds. And, you know, I have had 6 year olds come from other places that already think they're failing education. Well, their brain's not even ready to start education yet. So we're pushing that too soon and stressing children out, which is only adding to the complications further down the track.
I couldn't agree more. I think we start children off way too quickly. They should be playing and enjoying and creating and discovering, in my opinion.
Yes.
I totally agree with that one. The children, they make their uppercase letters first individually and master them?
Yes, they do that completely. And then I usually try, if I can, I do get 2 days in 10 weeks where I can be out of the classroom. And I had 9 children that I needed to master either uppercase or lowercase letters. So we got through as many as I could. We do the prep work before of saying the alphabet forwards and backwards. I can do that within my classroom. But the last part I like to do with them by themselves, especially for the children that need help with controlling their dial or keeping their focus.
So they've mastered all the uppercase letters individually. They can recognize them all individually. And when you say they can say their alphabet forwards and backwards, do they do that from the alphabet in front of them, or do you ask them to see it in their mind?
I get them to see it in their mind. Sometimes they have to do it in chunks. So we might do it in 3 lines and then they have another peek. But some 5-year-olds can just close their eyes and rattle their alphabet, and you can literally see them just going along where their alphabet is.
Amazing. And for people listening, when Maggie was saying that, she was moving her head along with the individual letters, which is what they do. But I have to be honest, when I do young learner programs that with that age, I don't always find that they can do that forwards and backwards in their heads. That's amazing.
They usually get to an, you know, I had a wee boy in the other day and he's just so delightful. He's recently turned 7 and he's learning that actually if he is focused, and you will see him, I'll say, what's happened is the letter there. And he's like, no. I said, remember, we can use our release and our focus. And you can see him just doing it. And then he's like, oh, W. and he gets so excited, and it's really a joy to see. And then since that, with so many things that we do in the classroom, he just knows if he releases and he focuses, that information will come back to him when he needs it.
That is so valuable to learn at that age, right?
Oh, definitely. And you see the children, when I'm reading with them, doing writing, a lot of children, especially the ones that know that they need it, like it is easier, you will see them at all times during the day, whether it's working with me, just releasing and starting again.
The buzzword over here is self-regulation tools. Children are supposed to self-regulate. Well, nobody actually tells them how.
No.
Right? They ask them to focus, they ask them to be relaxed, and they ask them to have the right sort of energy levels. But these tools are very specific exercises that they do that they can totally manage themselves. And if they can manage themselves, you don't have to.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And they have total control. It's actually very reassuring, especially for children with anxiety, to be in control of something.
Absolutely. A lot of children feel they don't control anything. And to learn that at that age, like 5, 6, 7 year olds, is absolutely magical, in my opinion.
Yes, definitely.
Beautiful. So do you introduce what sound the letter make? I mean, we say A, you are A, right? Do you do the A thing?
At the same time as I'm doing my Davis, I also do some phonic things as well as just general whole language. So I have a word of the week, but my word of the week, it's talked about, so we talk about the meaning. I think some of my five-year-olds must be the only children that can talk about a meaning of a word. They, our word might be down, and we'll talk about it from a higher place to a lower place, and they'll talk about that, and then the children will all go around and say, I am getting down off the chair, I'm going from the higher place to a lower place, and they're interacting with that all the time. And we don't just finish with that word that week. The next week, we'll still continue talking about it and say D-O-W-N, down.
So these are words that need meanings behind them, right? You can look up the definition of the word and you can tell the children what it means.
When they've completed all their alphabet, yes, they do. And for some children, even though they will still do their clay words, that is just helping before the confusion sets in. They are knowing what that word is, what it means. It does make a difference.
That's interesting. It's almost like you introduce it before you introduce it. They'll have a general idea before they actually have to make it. That's very cool.
Yes, it just helps all the children. And the children that are going to learn quickly and, I suppose, in a regular manner, that comes very quickly and they understand it and they just run with it and they learn those words very, very quickly.
And this is before the reading exercise, or have you started a reading exercise?
In my class, I have 5 to 7-year-olds. I've got children in all different situations of learning, from coming in and making shapes to doing words. So I have a large variety. So it's kind of trying to meet all those needs, supporting those ones that need supporting, giving them extra along the way. But I do a lot of group and individual work as well. I don't do a lot of things whole class. It's very much individualized and grouped.
I think that's incredible. I wouldn't be a teacher for anything. I think I love one-on-one. It's remarkable how you do that. So they've got their alphabet letters, uppercase, lowercase. They've started to introduce themselves to words. Do you ever get to the reading exercise in that age group?
Yes, and quite early on. Like, once I know that they know enough letters to get going, we do start the reading exercise, just because it's balancing those expectations within the New Zealand curriculum, but not stressing children. So children take books home to read to their parents. Even when they're becoming a more able reader, they take home an easier book, because I don't come home from work and read the latest research. I usually want to come home and I'm exhausted, and if I'm going to read anything, it might be an article in a magazine or something really relaxing that I find easy to read. So my expectation when the children go home is not that they're reading something difficult, it's reading something that's easy. So from very early on, they actually think reading is easy. Even if they are struggling with it from a teacher perspective, they believe that they can read. And that's my whole idea, is that no matter what, they'll believe they're capable of that and they are learning. And that's all that they need to understand, is that they are learning and they are making progress and feeling good about themselves.
It's really good. It takes away the fear of reading for such children, I'd say. Yes. That's really quite smart.
Very cool. Do you have the card, like the cutout card, and do they uncover one word at a time or one?
Some children need that, especially the children that are learning to stay focused. I've found in the past that if we do use the card, they very quickly know when they don't need it anymore. They know when they can stay focused. I'm just using my thumb or my finger to help them through, but I do have some children that need the card to just stay in focus. But yeah, they seem to self-regulate that after a while. They'll be like, no, I don't need the card, or pull it back. So they feel very much in charge of that.
That's interesting from my point of view, because I'm seeing the kids when they've got the challenges and they really need the card, because the card with this sort of cutout that only gives you one word at a time allows you to catch the disorientation, allows you to know when you've lost it. But I never thought of that. If they haven't picked up the challenge, then there's no need to catch it.
No, exactly. And I've had some very young children. If I notice when they're disorientating, I will say, what's happening for you? And actually, even a five-year-old said to me, the words are going all over the place. And I said, well, that's what we use our focus for. So I know that your hands aren't on your shoulders anymore, so you're not focused. Can you get focus again and then see what that's like? And she did that. And she just read it fluently. And I said, how was that? And she said, oh, that was easy. I said, so you understand now that this is what we use it for? And she said, yeah. And from then on, it wasn't a problem. But she hasn't had any confusions before that. And we're intervening before that becomes a big deal in her stressing about it.
I still use the little cutout piece of paper. I find it very useful, but I do it every now and then. So whenever I'm reading a book, I find if I'm just reading, I'm doing fine, then I think about it. Do I remember anything from the paragraph I just read? And if I don't remember anything, I grab the piece of paper and I use it and go, okay, what did I miss that made me skip over the word or the paragraph? I can read without it, but oftentimes I forgot what I read. So I find if I bring that in, it allows me to just catch on and go, okay, I can move on from there.
I don't know if you find it, but I can disorientate while still reading and be thinking about other things completely other than that. As a teacher, I'll be planning the rest of my day and I'll be reading a book to the children and they'll ask a question. Oh, did I read that? What was that about? No idea. I was so busy thinking about something else.
If you're reading a book and then thinking about you have to make dinner, and so all of a sudden you've mixed in your dinner plans with whatever you've just read.
So you have the children who have their tools, they have their alphabet mastered, they have their reading exercise, they know how to make meaning behind words. So everything is in place. They really don't need to attract these challenges. And the numbers that I saw on that film, after 6 months, the children who used all those strategies, their outcome level went up 79%. And the classes where some of the teachers were sort of cherry-picked what they wanted to use, not particularly all of them, even those went up 57%.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. It's just fantastic. But what I'm curious about is, in your school, when other teachers in your school see these children succeeding, do they then want you to learn how to do these strategies?
Yeah, so at the moment in our school, everybody has done DLS. They all know the skills behind it. My husband ended up coming and teaching at my school. He trained later in life after our second child, and he teaches in the senior room. And what's really interesting for him is he knows the children that have started with me from 5 and the ones that have come in much later. So the ones that have started at our program, even the ones that have taken longer to learn, are still achieving by the time they're 9.5 to 10.5. They're taking longer to get there, but we're okay about that because we know that as long as we don't pressure them but give them all the skills and tools that they need, they will get to the right place and be focused and be on task and know how to manage their own learning.
That is amazing. And so you have all the teachers in your school at least aware of these methods and probably using them most of the time?
Usually what happens is I like to try and have the children in my class for 2 years, because usually within 2 years I can really embed those tools and they are using them naturally without finding them. Teacher in the next class, she still does clay with the children in her class and continues that on. They do kush every morning. Those routines are still very much in place. And usually after that, the odd child will need reminder. We still talk about that even in the senior school, but it's so ingrained and so natural that they're ready to learn. So my husband does all sorts of things like 3D printing, creativity, amazing science experiments. They learn on their own. They're individual learners. They have their own research projects they're doing. It's very individualized, but they're ready to learn. They know how to learn. It's just what they want to learn now.
Exactly. It's that difference between learning to read and reading to learn. And they.
Exactly.
That's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Wow, I wish we could get this going in Canada. We've had about 5 or 6 DLS workshops that I've hosted. And from each one, maybe 1 or 2 teachers have taken it up. But unfortunately, we had so much here in Canada before DLS. Alton Gillingham is the big one here, and the whole phonetic thing, and all the learning assistance methods are based around basically giving the children more of what they couldn't do in the beginning. And so it's been really difficult, but the ones who have taken it, they really are enjoying it. They're experiencing exactly what you've seen.
Yes, because I'm a mentor and I get to go to other schools. Some teachers are not necessarily doing it class-wide. They are doing small groups, which still makes an impact, but the more we could be doing it class-wide, I think the bigger impact, and learning that at 5 and 6 we do not need to stress children or push them to learn when they're not ready to get there just yet. DLS is a perfect platform of getting them ready to learn, and then once you have those skills, they can get to the next stage.
Absolutely.
Have you had any students come back and be like, thank you for introducing this to me?
I've definitely had parents come in even when their children have been part of the program, and some parents realize that, oh yes, my child, I think they are dyslexic and this has really helped them. But what we find is our children, when they go off to the high schools, we're finding that they're being very successful, even our ones that have struggled for a long time, but they have all the tools by the time they're going to high school to make a massive difference. Because we're in a dairy area, sometimes people come in to work on a farm and then they leave again, and you know, you have small times with students. And one wee boy, he was six, that came in, and he would get so frustrated at six, and I could already tell he didn't think he could learn, and he'd try and break his glasses and get very, very frustrated. And I had to really build him up by giving him lots of easy or perceived easy things so that he could understand, and he got to the point that he was going well, and then he left. And one day I got this random phone call from a school, and it was actually then the fourth or fifth school he'd been in since he'd been with us. And I said, why are you ringing? And she said, oh, the parents said he's been most successful at your school. What did you do? Because we're having enormous behavior and learning issues. So what were you doing? And that's when I could tell them about DLS and what was happening. So the parents are recognizing, especially if they move away, well, the impact mm-hmm. that it can have if they haven't been with us long enough.
I think with COVID, especially here, with parents having to do more online help with their children and schooling, they've come to realise a little bit more what they can do and what they can't do.
Hmm. I think too, I was quite determined for my own children that they weren't going to have the difficulties. And definitely for my eldest son, I could tell it was harder. And he didn't learn to read quickly. And I could see his stress, you know, he fiddled with his hair. And I think as teachers, we need to be aware of what your children in your class are doing. It could be fiddling with their hair. It could be fiddling with their clothes. It could be playing with their fingers. It could be just running around in circles in your classroom. These are all things that I've had. Be aware of those signs that are actually telling you that the child is stressed and they don't actually know what is going on and that this is actually really hard for them.
That's a good point. Very good point.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes as teachers get so busy with all the things that they have to do, they're actually not looking for the important clues of what is actually happening to the children within their class. And you do have to be on the ball watching all the time and being yeah. sensitive to what is going on for your learners in your class. Yeah.
I mean, as much as it is important to have the DLS method in schools and have students and kids learn this way, and I'd say it's just as important to have the parent be aware of how to behave around their child when it comes to learning, so that at least they are aware of it and they can kind of handle it a bit better.
Yes, it is hard. And I mean, parents get their own frustrations with the fact that their children can or can't, and whether that be emotionally, socially, academically. And unfortunately, our lives have become so busy. You know, we're racing from one thing. Everybody has to work. Everybody has to get somewhere or do something rather than just slowing down and taking that time to see what's important.
I think COVID has allowed us to slow down and take a bit more time.
Yes, I know. Yeah. I personally enjoyed the first part of our short lockdown of 6 weeks. It was a time for us to stop and really spend time with our children, but then trying to teach online and teach our own children at home was...
I so admire people who homeschool, because I know for a fact that would not have worked for me with my son. It's more fun getting mum annoyed, right? Much more fun. So the other thing I was going to ask you was, if you had a message for teachers who are interested in this, I know one of the teachers who uses these methods locally, her big message is, this is not extra to your workload, right? It's something you can learn and you can present to the children, exactly the same curriculum, just a slightly different way of doing it. And knowing that you reach everybody, and knowing that the children are now able to manage themselves, actually reduces the load a little.
Oh, definitely. The fact that it impacts your social interactions, the behaviour in your class, the ability for the children to learn, and it's not extra on top. It just makes all the other learning so much easier.
But then you get happy children, happy parents, happy teachers. It's a win-win-win situation, right?
Oh, definitely. Yes. Yay. I definitely think New Zealand teachers are creative and they do want to do things, but they're probably not aware of the things that they're doing that aren't helping. And I guess that's for everybody. It's learning those new skill sets. And I think in some ways, some of the facilitators have said to me, what's really helped is actually teachers being able to come into my classroom. One day I had 9 teachers in there all at the same time, as well as all my children, and trying to run a normal classroom. But probably the most profound statement I had from a teacher is, I'm stressing my children out.
Wow.
I'm stressing them out. And I said, okay, well, that's great that you've realized that now. You can do something about that. Be okay that it's not happening today or tomorrow, but you're doing things towards the end goal.
Magical, just magical. That seems to me to be a very good place to stop. And thank you, Maggie, so much for your time and joining us from the other half of the world. It's a pleasure to meet you. And
yeah, hopefully maybe I'll see you in New Zealand one day.
I've discovered I'm not built for cold. I need to get to the warmth in our winters.
A good idea.
Very good idea. Thank you so very, very much. Wow, the adjectives dynamic and whirlwind and inspirational spring to mind. And I have a feeling that she has very lucky students in her class. So thank you, Maggie. That was amazing. By the time this podcast is broadcast, I'm hoping that you will be able to see a video on our YouTube channel, which shows Maggie working with some students in her school. When you get to YouTube, you just type in the Whole Dyslexic Society and you will hopefully see that video. For more information about Davis Learning Strategies, please go to www.davislearn.com. And as always, if you need to get hold of us, you can email me at info@thewds.org. Next up is the UK. We will be meeting Richard Whitehead, who is the head of Davis Dyslexia Association UK. He has a wealth of knowledge and he's willing to share it with us, for which I am extremely grateful. So off to tomorrow.